I mean, do you find yourself caring at all?
I do. I think you're getting a little worked up about it, though.
Because the economy is fucked, and my business is fucked. I'm making like a tenth of what I made 2 years ago. And it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And this is something that, you know, is going to fucking fall by the wayside if I can't get it together. And I've aged out of the business also. So I fucking show up on a set, and people ask me, it's like they think I worked on McHale's Navy or something like that.
So did that other show get picked up?
Yeah, it might have gotten picked up, but it's not a sure thing, and it's not enough to maintain what I'm kind of used to. I mean...
You don't think so? Fuck.
No, I can't tell. I don't know what the fuck's going on in the business anywhere anymore. Well, anyway, thanks for listening. It's just, you know, I've been in so many relationships where nobody listens.
Well, I definitely think relationships are about communication, don't you?
God, totally. Jesus, that's why we, you know, because it's completely two-way, and we're constantly, like, exchanging kind of what we think. I mean, that's how people relate. It's just so fucking ridiculous the way everybody wants something completely one-sided and wants something for nothing.
If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got the rap patrol on the cat patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cask is closed. Rap critics saves money, cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid. What type of facts are those? If you grew up with holes in your
side. Welcome to the Unnamed Podcast.
I
am not. Is not enough.
You're welcoming me today.
I tricked you.
Right. You guys said, Damon, stop planning to buy zillions of dollars in audio and video equipment, come to TIFF, and then 2 weeks later I come here and there's zillions of dollars in audio and video equipment. Douglas shaking him. Yeah, you weren't, you had no part in this.
You have nothing to say about this.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Thanks, Douglas.
Anyways, it's another week, another podcast.
Where is that?
And this week,
alarm. Remember TIFF.
This alarm. You're going to delete that alarm
because it is not.
You are
useless.
No longer remembering TIFF ever at all.
It is not. Delete alarm. Are you sure you'd like to remove this alarm? Yes. I'm sure.
This week on the podcast, we're going to sit down. And we're going to be talking about the latest film by Abbas Kiarostami.
Oh, yes, we are.
Like Someone in Love.
Why Nondara? すぐに出かけるから
今日は無理だって
とっても尊敬してるし
negative. Andrew, don't even, don't, we're not playing that game. Come. Come. Let's not do this.
Let's not do it like this.
Yeah. Look here. This is a Defend Your Movie. Right?
This is a Defend Your
right.
Movie.
This is no longer the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Defend Your Movie, Episode 1. Andrew Robinson spat just immense game last year. Right? Around Christmas time, when we were all talking about favorite movies, he came back from TIFF. He's like, this is the best shit I've ever seen. Even come Christmas, he's like, this is still the best shit I've ever seen. Holy shit, guys. On and on and on. Right? And so I've been waiting. I'm like, alright, I have to see this movie. Right? Andrew and three other people saw the movie. I have to see this movie. Because nobody would put this movie as number one if it wasn't at least something special, right? Maybe I wouldn't have it at number one, but there must be something. Something is in this movie that put this movie above. And I'll remind you, quite a few movies came out last year. Quite a few interesting movies came out last year.
No, there are no interesting movies.
I'm just like, none of that. None of this is close. Only one movie.
New Catherine Bigelow film.
Right.
Who watches
that? Like, fuck that noise.
A new Tarantino movie.
We have come here. And everybody's like, loop on some other shit. And Andrew's like, you guys are all high and drunk. I flew to Canada to see Perfection.
A Perfection I saw.
Right. So, Andrew Robbins, you've done this before, and I'd like you to do it again. Just a small recap of what this movie is and why you love it so much.
This movie is about two people, Akiko and Watanabe. Akiko is a young girl living in Tokyo, and she is a student who is also working as a prostitute, who one night, as her duties as a prostitute, is asked to go and spend some time with this older man called Watanabe. And it's about basically their interaction over the next day. It jumps between these conversations that end up happening between them from their first meeting towards their eventual, I don't know if we can say last, the movie doesn't even let us know whether it's the last meeting. And it kind of puts this all in a somewhat of a mysterious sense, this movie, because we never find out, and it's never discussed as to exactly why it's so insisted that Akiko be the woman that attends to this man's needs. And at the same time, we find out in these conversations as this movie is going on that this man's needs are not physical. This is not just a random everyday prostitute moment.
I don't even... Thank God the mics were on. Douglas,
mm-hmm.
Did you hear that a while ago?
Something about random prostitute moment. Oh, no. What did you say?
Oh, Lord. Alright, Andrew.
Douglas is deep in playing Angry Birds.
No, Douglas is deep in trying to do his top five.
And that's basically what the movie is. Now, as it relates to why I love this movie so much...
The picture came back.
The picture came back?
The picture came back.
Oh, sweet.
It disappeared.
As to why I love this movie so much is that it's something that's not just... I almost want to use the word tangible, even though movies are not a tangible thing in any sense at all. But when you watch certain movies, I mean, we can talk about some of the movies which we put on our top 10 list of the year last year. We talk about Lupo, we talk about Django Unchained, we talk about Zero Dark Thirty. There's something there which is really easily... It's really easy for you to grab on and understand what's going on with the movie.
Zero Dark Thirty came out last year?
Yup.
Or did it come out this year?
Came out last year.
Okay, never mind, keep going.
2012.
Wow. Oh, so now it's 2012.
Because I'm pretty sure we had a big argument about it being a this year movie, no?
Yes.
I thought, but anyway.
We're moving on.
Okay. So it's allowed to be on my list now?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Where was I? The movie in itself, it's unlike all of these other movies, there's something which you can't quite grab about this movie. And what I love about it, and what I love about all of Kiarostami's films that I've seen, which, now that I'm thinking about it, I do love all the ones that I've seen so far, is the way that he kind of unravels things within conversations that we end up watching. If you even look at that first scene in this movie, when you're not even looking at Akiko, but you're hearing her voice as it begins, and you're kind of unsure as to who is talking, then eventually it turns to her, but only after we've seen someone else speak with her, Nagisa, her friend. We're trying to figure out who she's talking to on the phone. Why is this person asking her where she is? Is she in this place that she's in? Then we see this other gentleman who we assume at the beginning that he is the owner of the restaurant that she's in. Slowly but surely, we find out that he is the pimp, for lack of a better word, in this scenario. And he kind of just comes out with, like, just a conversation that you end up seeing within this scene as he ends up forcing this woman into taking this engagement and heading off to meet the professor. It is such a weird...
15% off.
15% off. I think I have to go now. It's just this weird ability for Kiarostami as a writer, as well as a filmmaker where when I see these scenes, they end up unraveling not just narratively or character-wise when I'm finding out more and more about this person, but visually it does the same. With this movie, there's something that I kind of noticed watching it again, that how he represents spaces in this film kind of amazes me, in that you never end up leaving a space outside of our subjective perspective. And even when we look outside of this space which we exist in, it never really represents anything that you wouldn't normally see if you were in that subjective perspective. And then when you eventually get some form of an objective view, when you see, like, for example, towards the end of the film, the old neighbor, right? The first time we see her, we're not looking at her, we're looking at Watanabe. The second time, we're looking at her. And that's because Watanabe isn't there. Watanabe has so much apathy for this woman that we don't need to see her. But because we're seeing her through the eyes of someone else, we have to view her because she's now an important part of this person's understanding of the moment. And throughout the movie, it's all about those spaces, to the point where when the movie's over, it ends on the point of a brick breaking through this man's home, right? Somebody breaking into your space, right? And I love that about this movie. I also, at the very same time, knowing when I saw this movie initially, when I watched it again now, when I watched it for a third time tonight, each time I was watching it, I knew going in, you guys are going to fucking hate this movie, because it is very calm, it is very cold, and it almost doesn't care if you get anything out of it. Whether, like I have gone to an extent of just investing myself in these conversations and into these interactions, so that almost with each of these conversations I find something particularly unique and particularly interesting to look at. And I'll get into some of the more detailed as we move down the list, but I think I've said enough that this time I kind of want to hang off to Douglas first, because I think he has least understanding, not understanding, but least viewing experience with this movie.
Least viewing experience. What is that? I've seen it once.
Okay.
No, you saw it 0.8 times.
How does that work?
Because you slept.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I honestly did not. I wanted to. And my head was kind of dropping, but I never actually lost consciousness once.
Should put that on the back of the box.
And also, you're the only one of us who doesn't like any Chris Tommy film you've seen. Damon at least likes Certified Copy.
Yes.
True. So, Andrew, I really don't have much to say about this film. What I will say is this, is that it's a technically good film that's really boring.
It's just a really boring film that was filmed well. You started off poorly. Oh no, we're going down this road.
No.
That's boring.
And I wonder how much I can actually back that up in an argument, because the truth of the matter is, you could, or somebody could, objectively,
I can back it
up. argue the same thing about, say, the Before series.
Negative,
right? No, people
nope.
could say that. I'm not.
I've broken it down to new numbers.
Okay, very good.
Right.
Because
are we statistically doing this movie?
But I seriously, I've thought about it, and I seriously wonder. Right, I seriously wonder. Is there something just a little off with my, I don't know, morals or my just humor or whatever it is with my tastes that makes me like a movie like Before, take your choice, take your pick, because I like all of them, versus say a movie like this? Because if you look at it, a lot of the aspects of this movie are very similar to Before, right? You've got limited characters,
mm-hmm.
right? You've got a story and just a movie that's solely dependent on what people are saying to each other,
right? You know, it's not an event-driven movie, really. It's all about the conversation and what you learn about the people through that conversation. And the locations are limited in the sense that, you know, if you're in one place, you're in one place, and, you know, the camera doesn't move around much. You're just kind of capturing that conversation, and you're not worried about, you know, things like in an intrigue movie, you might be wondering that the camera might pan and you might be saying, what's that guy doing over there? Is he planting a bomb? There's none of that, right? It's just all about the conversation between two people and not much else.
But at the same time, like, sorry to cut you, but
yeah, yeah.
What this movie does with its peripheral is also very interesting. I mean, we talk about that opening scene, and I think I mentioned it to you already, in that when, for example, we see Hiroshi, the pimp,
mm-hmm.
get up from the table and go outside, we don't follow him outside, but however, the camera itself is in such a position that we're seeing the reflection off the outside glass,
mm-hmm.
right? And the way that he positions himself in the frame is such that he kind of covers Nagisa and
yeah,
Kiko.
But that's what I'm saying, is that the way the camera is used in this movie is it's not so much about the location. I mean, of course, he wants the shot to look nice, and they all do. But really and truly, what he's doing is he's making sure that whoever is talking, you can see them, and that's really all. That's the big thing in all of these
for
situations.
A lot of this movie, you're not actually seeing the people who are talking while they're talking.
Like, when?
There's the opening scene when you start out, and as I said, you don't even know the girl is talking. She's actually, the camera's in front of her looking forward,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, but that's for how long?
About 5 minutes.
About 5 minutes.
A while. Sometimes you don't even know who exactly is discussing halftime through that scene until, like, slowly but surely you meet people and you kind of attach voices to people. There's the next scene when she is in the car and she's listening to her grandmother on the phone, and you see her out the window. Right? She...
No.
You're
you
not,
don't know.
No,
those
sorry.
Are all messages.
Nope. That's voice messages.
Yeah, that doesn't count, Andrew.
Nice.
Continue.
Mm-hmm. And then it never happens again.
Yeah.
For the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Except for when the old crazy woman is screaming at him when he's in the door.
Yeah, exactly. So it's...
So,
by and large, the way that he uses his camera is he keeps it, as you said, you know, kind of tied to each location. But really and truly, it's all about you watching the people talk.
And the interactions.
And the interactions. That's all this movie is. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because, as I said before, that's essentially Before Midnight or Before Sunset or whatever. And I love those movies.
Yeah,
and I don't really...
Story.
I'm not sure I understand... I can't actually say to you, here is why I like Before Sunset, and here is why, or rather, here is what works about Sunset, here is what doesn't work about this movie. I can't really say that, other than the fact that I was bored, right?
I can tell you. I can answer that.
No, okay, answer it for me, please, because I'd like to know.
You didn't care about these people.
But is that my fault?
No.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Just like when we were talking last night about the counselor, where I'm like, look, I see where part of this could be a movie I would like,
yeah.
but I don't give a shit for any of those people. So it doesn't count in my brain.
You hate people?
I mean, this movie, yeah, I guess you're right. This movie, it's just one time after another where I'm like, okay, why is this happening and why does this...
To continue about the times when you're not seeing people, there's a moment where Akiko goes and gets into the bed. We don't see her when they're
yes,
having a conversation.
Yes, we do. She's in the television.
In the peripheral.
No, but no. As far as I'm concerned, that is a way to keep her in the shot. That's just an artsy way to do it.
He's very technical.
Yeah.
He's clearly a master of his camera. But, you know, yes, we don't see her, you know, like how we normally see her, but she's in the reflection of the TV.
Yeah.
As it's not an accident. It's
exactly.
And it's the same
thing
with the first.
I'm not saying it's an accident.
No.
I'm
Andrew, I understand. I understand. But they're not really off screen. They're technically off screen, but they're not really, because you can't see them. So yeah, but not really.
Right.
And again, so far, even if you count that, that's three times for about 5 minutes each, 15 minutes out of a, how long is this? Like
1 hour and 49 minutes.
There you go. Would you like me to calculate the percentage?
There are 58 seconds worth of credits. For so 48 minutes.
So if we do the percentages of action in Fast and the Furious versus dialogue, are we therefore going to decide
we're being funny and I'm not. You see, the thing is, you say you're defending it against me. I'm not saying this as a bad thing. I'm just saying this is what he does. The movie is all about you watching
the way you're saying it. I know you're not trying to be completely negative about it, but you're trying to, well, how it comes off is it sounds dismissive.
No, right? Absolutely. And I don't want to come off that way. I'm saying is that I think, because, and I keep trying to go back to the before series, because they're so similar in that sense, that all you're doing is you're watching two people talk and you're feeling the vibe between them, right? And I am 100% down with that. It's clearly just that what actually occurs, it's
so
boring to me.
So when I said you're dismissive, I don't mean you're dismissive of the story, mm-hmm, or of the characters. I'm saying you're being dismissive of everything else that's happening.
And it's the complete opposite. I'm fine with everything else happening. I'm dismissing the characters. I'm saying that they're probably just too boring for me, or whatever it is. Like, Andrew, I don't understand. I really don't understand where, because so we're kind of focused on this one thing, which is the fact that the camera keeps everybody in the shot so that you can see them talking. I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I'm not dismissing that. And that is what you're talking, what you're saying that I'm being dismissive about. I'm just saying that that's a style that he uses, a style that I like generally. What I'm saying is that the meat behind it, the conversation, the character development, that stuff just didn't intrigue me.
Okay.
Am I being clear? I'm not sure if I'm being clear.
You're being very clear. I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But Andrew has to defend his move. Yes. That's what he's doing. He's just trying, like everything you say, he's going to try and find, you know, a way to express that while it was a problem for you, he didn't see it as a problem, which is fine.
So can I start with your list now?
Right. No, it is. It has come back to me. The first time I watched this movie, I was I really wanted to watch this movie. Hype through the roof, because Andrew said it was his best movie, and I had to see it. Right, good or bad, I wanted to see what it was
that caught Andrew.
Right. Because there must be something special, right?
Andrew's crazy.
That was the mistake I made the first time. There is something special about this film. I need to see it so that I can gauge whether Andrew is crazy or not. I watched it the first time and went, nothing about this movie special. And then I said, instead of me coming on last week and just talking off the top of my head, I went, no, let us review it this week. Let me sit down and watch it again. Now that I know what I'm in for, right?
Mm-hmm.
The second time I watched it, I went, I'm seeing no difference here. Literally. And then I'm like, is this going to be a Double Life of Veronique situation where I keep trying to find something because I think there's something there, but there, in all reality, there's nothing there. And so I said, I'm going to wait, give it some time, watch it on another day when there's a good mood. There's literally nothing else. To see if there is something, right? And the third time I sat down, I said, I'm going to take notes. Taking notes, everything that I say, because there might be something here. Turns out, wrong on all three occasions. This movie isn't even remote. This is kind of entertaining. This movie is... is poor. This is a poor attempt at storytelling. He clearly can direct. He, as you guys say, is visual, but we don't talk about that. At the start of this, I asked Andrew to explain why this movie is awesome. He didn't. He just rambled on and on about some of the things he liked. But he wasn't talking specifically about the movie as a whole. He just broke it down into pieces, which is a fine, a valid way to argue a point. But he hasn't told me, Damien, this is awesome because, and points or something, which that is okay. So I'm going to talk about the problems I had with this movie. Now, this movie is, as Douglas said, it is very boring. Douglas didn't spend the time or take any notes to quantify that statement. I have. So the movie starts 15 minutes in, she gets into a taxi. Right after her pimp sends her around the engagement, she gets into a taxi. The taxi ride lasts 11 minutes. There are 7 voice messages in the taxi ride. Now, 11 minutes is a long time to stare at a girl sitting in a taxi. It is a long time. A very long time. A long enough time for me to start wondering what is happening in this movie. A long enough time for me to realize that she would have had her phone on when her grandmother made those calls, because she turned off the phone after she had the argument with her boyfriend. But it is clear that her grandmother called her before all of that. So why is it that she's just getting these messages? So I'm like, okay, so if the phone was on, she saw that her grandmother was calling her. Either she was on an engagement, which makes her a terrible person, or she saw them and went, you know what, grandma, I don't care. Which also makes her a terrible person. But then she cried when they went around the square, and I went, that is in clear conflict of what she did beforehand. Alright, fine. Moving on. Right, like, alright, I don't get that, but sure, why not? Let us move on. Now, the movie has started. It's 30 minutes before you see the old man. What's his name?
Watanabe.
Right. 30 minutes to him, the movie started. There's this joke that I thought was going to be a running joke about the centipede. I told it twice. Both times it was a terrible joke. She told it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some awkward conversation. I'm like, alright, that's good. Of course, if you're a young girl and some old man asks you to come and sleep in his bed, you try to break that. So if you can, you tell some lame joke and it's awkward and we'll move on. I'm like, at that point I went, alright, movie, fine. I was on board with the movie up until, like, the taxi thing. I went, that's a little bit excessive. And they told a joke and then they skipped to the next morning. I'm like, alright, fine, I'll accept the first 30 minutes of the movie as is, not a problem. But then the movie decides to do just some really, really, like, you can see the director's like, this is how I want my movie. And as Andrew said, he probably doesn't care whether anybody thinks the movie is engaging or not. But the next hour of the movie, a majority of the movie is spent with people sitting in cars,
mm-hmm,
having conversations. The conversation he has with her fiancé, like him letting him into the car, first of all, I cannot understand how that happened. And him covering for her is fine, but then the rest of the conversation that they had, nothing about the conversation felt special. Then she came back into the car and he went, alright, so I understand what the conflict in this movie is. She's a prostitute. This man is covering for her, and the fiance is a lunatic. You know that from the start of the movie, because he asked her to count tiles, and went, all right.
We all do, right?
Right, all right, crazy man. And then you saw him, and you're like, all right, I can see that his behavior is erratic. That's because he thinks he's losing her, but he doesn't seem that crazy. Like, not in person. It seems, you know, kind of sad, kind of weird. And then there is a issue with the car, and they go to the garage, and a scene takes place that literally serves no purpose. When that other guy came into the garage and was talking to the professor, can you please explain what that has nothing to do with him? Where does that fall in the movie, in getting me to understand anything about the movie? Please, Andrew. Please explain why I had to sit there for 10 minutes to have these two people talk and say, oh, I studied sociology. Alright, fine. You fix in the car, because of course you contrived the car breaking down so that you could come here. And why are we here? And then they drive off and you go, alright, let's her off at the bookshop. And you go, so, alright, so the next thing I'm going to see is his engagement with the girl at the bookstore. No, that doesn't happen. The old man drives off, and in a move of sheer brilliance, the director realizes how boring the movie is and has the old man fall asleep in his own goddamn movie. The movie is so boring. Oh. It's not even like a short amount of time.
I thought that was weird, and I 100% accept your explanation.
Right. The director is trolling everybody who's watching the movie. He's like, alright, realize this is boring. Let's just have him nod off for a good 2 minutes.
Alright.
And he just falls asleep and you're like, wait, what? He slept all night. Why is he so tired now? What happened previously that he's tired because he's old? Like, literally, what is happening here? Why is he falling asleep? The drive to the garage, movie, please. And he was like, no, he just fell asleep, falling asleep. And then you see him interact with the old woman, and you go, all right, movie, I know it. You have brought this old woman in just so that something can happen towards the end of the movie. I've seen enough movies. I know where this is going. And sure enough, the old woman materializes so that he can show Akiko that not getting married is as bad as she views getting married. When if you don't get married, you'll become this old bat, look staring out a window waiting for people to walk by. I'm like, so that is all she's there for. Could you find a less subtle way to do this? Like, no, this is the best way you could. You've directed 30 odd films, and this is the best you could come up with, sir. Alright, fine. And so the movie continues. You see, the conflict happens off screen. The fiance punches Akiko in the face or kicks her in the face. We don't know, of course, because they don't show you. Frantic phone call. He's double parked. He has to drive around, wasting even more time. And then he carries her home. She sits on the steps and you go, alright. So, not even that, you wouldn't even give me what her. And the fiance, you wouldn't even give me that conversation. A literally engaging conversation. He said, no, we're just going to call the old man and we're moving on. And then they get inside the room, and the fiance returns. Of course, they're not going to. By that time, I realize he's not going to show any of the interesting shit in this movie. His job is to make a movie devoid of the interesting things that you want to see. Because we've made so many movies showing you all the things that happen in love. I'm going to make a movie about two people's failing relationship from the perspective of the man you literally don't care about. The guy runs up to the door, whatever. And then the final thing, he thinks he's clever. He's like, breakthrough window and credits. I'm like, you must have lost your goddamn mind if you think this movie. What the fuck is happening here? Like, no, the movie is a test. This is one of those movies that I realized the third time I watch a movie, I'm like, oh, it is one of those movies where it proves that at a certain point, if you watch enough movies, the same argument was having not that long ago, where people move past what makes movie awesome. Yeah, the movie is awesome because a giant robot punch a giant monster in the face. And so, of course, it is also. Or, in the Before series, these two people have the greatest date we've ever seen ever. That is why you like Before Sunrise and Sunset. Because all their engagements are fascinating. Because you would hope, and everybody would hope, to have one date go that well. Nothing about this movie is any of that. There's no... Douglas Robinson... Why in God's name is the movie? Because it's not like the movie started out in the old man's perspective. So it's not like it was a rule established early on. We're only going to show you this movie from the perspective of this old bat. That is not it. Alright, fine. why is it that when Akiko is in the, you know, the meat of the matter, the heart of the argument, why couldn't I get that scene? Is it because he thinks we've seen all that so many times? Why do I get the frantic phone call? And you see her, you hear the call, and he goes and picks her up and you go, alright, something. And no, she's just sad with the cloth out her mouth. And then the old man drives out of the scene, giving the crazy woman enough time to lecture her, which is the most contrived thing in history. And then the movie ends and you go, there is nothing about this movie. Andrew thinks there is something special about this movie, and he'll never be able to tell me, because there's nothing special about this movie. There's nothing. The writing isn't great. The acting is okay, but who cares? Like, literally, who cares? It's two people staring at me. Alright, fine. The acting is off the charts. What happened with this whole story part? You know, the thing that's supposed to engage me and keep me watching the movie? Nothing.
You ever have that moment
Woman drops asleep?
Where so you're having a discussion and someone pulls out that? A knife and you're like, I think I'm going to have the discussion somewhere else.
Andrew Robinson, the thing that irks me most about the movie
is that I like it.
No. If you like the movie, that is fine. I have no problem with you liking the movie. This is the fact that you put it number one on the list.
Isn't that the definition of liking?
No. We're not playing that game. We're really not playing that game. Because the last time you played that game, The Dark Knight lost to some horseshit movie, and you've been defending yourself ever since. Don't play that. Andrew Robinson, we've been doing this for long enough. We've been doing it for years. We've never had anybody pick their favorite movie and not, like, and the rest of us just looked at her and go, what the fuck is he talking? There has always been some merit to the number one picks. There has always been. There's nothing about this movie that makes Andrew, you cannot actually want me to sit here and believe that you think this movie is better than the 9 other movies on
your list. So the question I have for you,
higher shit.
The question I have for you is there any way that you believe I can let you see that I actually...
No, that is what I really wanted to try. And Andrew, if we get into esoteric nonsense, I'm going to break this in your face.
All right, let me at least start here, right? Because I think the one thing that I kind of spent the most time thinking about when I was watching this movie that I feel like you didn't even go close to, right? You didn't even look at. Like, for the entire part of this movie, the one question I always had wasn't, why didn't he show me the lovers fight? Why didn't I finally get to see the karate man kick down the old man?
Interesting. Right.
Why did it take 10 minutes for a taxi ride to happen? The question I always had in my mind was, why did it have to be Akiko? Why did Akiko have to be the one that went to Watanabe?
Because the pimp wanted her to. The old man didn't demand that she go.
No.
It was the pimp's decision. At the start of the movie, he's like, because I said so.
But then when she gets to the apartment, he knows where she's from. He's made something special just for her.
Because he... Andrew, no, he's well,
open to the pimp. Just give me a second. Give me a second to go through this process. Because this is a question I don't think I've quite answered perfectly yet. And maybe you can tell me, Andrew, you're an idiot. This is the answer. But give me a second. All right? Because if you think about it, yes, he probably talked to the pimp who was his student, as he mentions before, and he's like, I have this girl. But then the question is, why does it have to be her? Why did he say, I want her? I start to think more and more about the relation, the common factor being the schooling, being the subject of the schooling, and why that would end up in the conversation between the pimp and the guy, and Watanabe. And then I kind of think back to that first interaction in the apartment, to when they're discussing the painting, when they're talking about the painting. What was it called? It was called Woman Training Parrot or something like that.
Right.
And even Akiko mentions that as a child, her uncle used to tell her, or that her family used to hypothesize that the parrot was actually teaching the woman. We, at that point in time, are then associating her with the woman in the painting, because they tell us that as a child she said, everyone said she looked like the woman in the painting, and it was just so interesting. Then we're watching this conversation of Watanabe trying to get this woman to come and have dinner with him, but slowly and surely the woman goes into the bed and said, no, we're going to bed now. Is she trying to train the parrot? Is the man the parrot? And more I start to think about these things. And the fact that these questions come up in my mind are really the reason why I end up enjoying this film so much.
Wait, hold on. So I see you're trying to make a metaphor, but I'm kind of stupid. What's the metaphor you're trying to make? So what? Who is the parrot and what training does he require?
That is the question.
No.
Literally.
No, you need to. No, I'm being serious now.
I know, stop.
I'm being 100% serious. You said that the metaphor is, right? So
I want to stop.
No, seriously. I need to understand this, right? So you say, and I understand that a metaphor could be made, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the paintings, the people said that the painting really and truly, you know, she's teaching the parrot, or the parrot is teaching her, whatever it is, right? Whichever mm-hmm. way it goes. And so therefore that is what is happening between these two people. What is that metaphor saying? What is being taught? What's being taught?
I don't know.
No, but you see.
No,
that's,
hold on.
Okay.
Honestly, I don't get to that point. I don't get to ask what is being taught. I'm trying to figure out who are playing these rules and why are they? Why is it that he's decided that he needs to meet the girl or the parrot, whoever, whichever one she's supposed to be? Why is it that I somehow have decided that this guy purposely chose Akiko for reasons that we are not told. Right?
Yeah.
And I keep constantly searching this film, not for answers, but just for clues as to possibly why and how he ended up influencing her throughout the film. Right? Whether it's, as Damien says, to show marriage isn't... not getting married might be the worst thing in the world. Or maybe it's to show that young people need experience, as he has a conversation with the fiancé. The male, the guy. Are they both fiancés?
Yes,
my brain is
Well, he says she's her fiancé. She clearly acts like she's not. It's up in the air sort of thing.
He's just talking about
right?
the
actual
title.
Word. Like,
yeah,
I thought,
title,
for a second,
yeah.
I thought it was a female word.
Yes, no. He said, yeah.
Okay.
No, you can be a male fiancé.
Oh, that's what he... Yes, Andrew. It's fiancé. Both ways
both
it's fiancé.
And just all of these things that I just find fascinating to see.
Can I go back to the metaphor again?
Okay.
Sure.
I don't understand...
So
you see let's forget.
Okay.
So you see a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
You see it.
Mm-hmm.
But
you
don't you see the metaphor, but
see
that there's a metaphor
in
place.
When you look at the painting and they're talking about the painting and they're talking about the fact that the woman is teaching the parrot or the parrot is teaching the woman,
mm-hmm.
they don't talk about what they're teaching
each other. Yeah. But you see, no, this is just my perspective, right? When I watch a movie and I think it's great because it's on like 10 different levels, right? I think it's great because I understand those levels. Because I see those levels. Or exactly.
Right.
And when I see a metaphor, I say this metaphor is good because I understand it. A metaphor can't be good if you don't understand. Or at least, it's not that it can't be good, but it can't be the reason I like this movie. Because
I don't understand it.
And I don't even really see what's happening, and that's what it sounds like you're saying about it, which is weird to me. But the truth of the matter is, you know, for me, you asked that question: why did he or did he not ask specifically for her? If so, why? And why is this all happening? Essentially, are all of the questions that you're asking, or at least some of them, right? For me, you know what I do? I watch this movie and I see something fairly simple. I know this is, I think, just scratching the surface, assuming there is something below the surface. But for me, I see it as a simple thing. This guy wants a relationship, but not a sexual relationship. He wants to not be lonely and have like a sort of daughter or granddaughterly relationship. He called his friend, who he says is his friend. He may not be his friend, but who cares? He calls some dude, right? And says to the guy, here's what I want. Okay, it maybe he didn't say I want a granddaughter. Maybe he was just like, send me a girl. But what girl are you sending me? And he tells him, all right, I'm going to arrange for this person, which is why the pimp is like, just go down there, because
she's
already
here,
just go down there.
She has
and exactly,
this
yeah. And so he now knows about her. That explains how he knows about her, and because. Maybe he hasn't said, I want her for non-sexual pleasure, which is why she comes in assuming, and the pimp says nothing, that, you know, I'm going to come fuck you. And he's like, no, whoa, hold on. We've got wine, but not like that. No, not wine to, not sex wine, like granddaughter
right.
wine.
Not three penis wine.
And exactly, not the three penis wine. And and he's like, I made you soup because I want you to feel comfortable
right.
because it's from your homeland. And then it goes even further, right? Because if this was just, you know, something for a one night stand, if this was, you know, whatever it was, she'd be out on her ass the next morning, or even that night when he realizes, shit, she's just sleeping. Okay, I'm going to pick her up and just kick her out of my house. He doesn't. He then continues. He drives her to her school and waits on her to take her to wherever she wants to go after that. Then he inserts himself in her relationship with her, whatever the hell he is, whether he's a fiancé or just a crazy ex-boyfriend. But he inserts himself in that relationship and, well, I don't even want to say crazy. Things happen because of that. But to me, this movie really is the story of a lonely man inserting himself in the relationship of somebody else because he's lonely, right? And I'm not saying that can't be a good story. I mean, thinking about it, it could be a great story, but it's not in this movie.
Okay. And, alright. Even taking it from your side, right? Say, like Douglas came up with an explanation, but say there's some other explanation out there, right? Why the man is doing all of this, and even taking your metaphor into, you know, consideration, you know, who is teaching who, and whatever. The rest of the movie, like, how does the movie itself, how does that make the movie, like, the movie that happened, the movie, what played out, after the painting and after him, like him trying to teach, I guess, the fiance, but he had no idea of knowing that he was going to ever meet the fiance. He was trying to teach a girl. None of the conversations he had with the girl was, I mean, he said, you know, she is, no, he said to the guy that he was too young.
Yeah.
Both of them were too
young. Yeah.
Right? And so the who is teaching who, there's like two more scenes after that, and then the completely useless scene in the garage. Like, even if we integrate all the metaphors and all the, like, that scene still doesn't help anything in the movie. And then the movie just continues, and not, like, what is the thing, what is the conflict in the movie that keep, you know, I don't like using this word, but fine. Where are the stakes? What is the stakes in this movie? The stakes are what exactly? And they don't play with any of that. I just get this drab story from a perspective of whoever the director wanted at the time, but not from any perspective that would make the show any more interesting. Like, seriously, why couldn't I see any other shit that would have made the story more? Douglas, if after he dropped off the guy at the car park, right? He fixed the car. It wasn't contract. The belt was worn. Fixed the car, right? Old man and girl drives off. The guy in there says to him, who is the fiance, the guy who's driving the car, said, you know, that girl is a prostitute, right? And then you get to watch his reaction. You get to see him, you know, try and wrangle all those emotions. You get to see him meet the girl at the shop, and then you get to see whatever led to her being hit and whatever. I would watch that. What I don't want to watch is a man sleep in traffic. Are you fucking serious? What? Come on, dog. And If you had put this movie at 10, I'd have come here and I'd have gone, Andrew, that movie's dumb. Like, it's nobody, it's in nobody's top 10, but fine. Sure. Andrew said it's, like, Douglas, we sat here, right? Andrew knew none of us was going to see the movie in time. And he sat here and looked both of us in the face and was like, this is the best movie that has to... Much like the other movie that he claimed to be his best movie. Right? Take this waltz. And much like Ruby Sparks, which both of you forgot, in 2 years' time, I will ask this fool, what's the best movie of 2012 again? And if this movie comes up, I'll never do a podcast again. Never again. He'll
I'll
never.
Say, what was it called? Lupo?
Right? He's like, what came out in 2012? He'll look up a list, 2012, and he's like, I'm pretty sure I picked one of these great movies. And fuck whatever this is. Andrew, there's...
I'll go to the shelf and pick up all the Cursed Tommy films.
Andrew.
Like this one.
Like this movie. This movie reminds me of the conversation that we had when we were reviewing No. Like, everybody, Andrew was like, yes, Damien, but it's so pretty. And the fake film grain and the shitty ads. That is what makes the movie great. And like overlooking the rest of the movie that nothing happens. It's like all this technical shit that I find fascinating. Him shooting the scene and the man being reflected in the glass. All of that shit is incredible. I like watching that. And so I'll overlook all this other nonsense that is not there. Sure, this movie is not that great. But I'll look past that. But he didn't have No on his top 10. He didn't have it in his top 5. Sure as fuck didn't have it as number 1. This movie's not... I will never allow Andrew to leave this door. Never. I will... if I was a person that did tattoos, holy shit, I had a tattoo this. Like, I just put... like Someone in Love greater than Dark Knight Returns. You remember? Avengers came out last year. Zero Dark Thirty came out. That is the reason I'm lumping in Zero Dark Thirty into last year. Because this fool... wants me to believe that the movie we just saw is in the same... Like, if I was able to rank movies just on a real scale, like, you had to stamp them with a seal of approval before they go out the door, Zero Dark Thirty would be like 90 grade movie. This would be garbage. Like, please send back to be recertified. It's not like I would even call this a movie. It's a movie byproduct. It's a movie adjacent. What the Andrew, you drunk?
Is it weird that right now I'm thinking about how many movies can I make you guys watch from this guy before, like, you just stop coming?
Like, number one. Number... do you know how excited I was to see this movie? Just to see what it was. Even if it was... like, if it was the movie that we saw. Your movie, The Vampire People.
What? Near Dark?
No. The movie that we just watched where they were eating each other. We saw it last week. What's the name of that movie?
Trouble Every Day.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. I don't think of them as vampires, which is why.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're biting people. If... the movie was Trouble Every Day, I'd have come here and go, that movie's weird as shit. Like, I don't know. Certainly been my number one. Holy shit, that movie. Alright, dog. I would have a problem.
Yeah, because then it's like, okay, you like weird. Alright, fair enough.
Like,
and I think that's why I like it and you guys really don't.
Like, if, like, Holy Motors came on. If it was, I was expecting something, just for there to be something that I could point to and go, fine, that is the thing where it turned. Where is it in this movie? Like, I don't see it.
I don't think it's there. It's not there to
because
be seen.
Because there's nothing there.
Nothing.
Is it the picture? Is that it? He saw the bird and he's like, that is it. I've never seen the bird teaching people metaphor. This movie is the best. Talked about it for a hot second. And then our old man fell asleep. If you think you're going to leave this door, I'm not sure. Nope.
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to create this psychological reaction where every time you try to shame me for this movie, I'll just go and watch it again. I'll just make myself happy and watch the movie. Disgusting. So, moving on to questions. Last week I had proposed that, given Ridley Scott's filmography, the two films that he's most revered for being Alien and Blade Runner, I was kind of questioning which film, if you could only save one, would you save?
And Prometheus, of course.
The internet responded, and the majority saved Alien. Wanted
of course,
Alien.
Of course they
did. But weirdly enough, there were really only two non-Alien responses. There was one who went for Blade Runner and decided the reasoning behind this was so that there would be no more Alien versus Predator or Prometheus in existence. Right?
All right.
That's
if
a fair.
If
that's
we're
a
going
fair
by
reason.
That logic, then all right, I'll have to pick Blade Runner.
And another person decided to ignore completely and say, I'll say Black Hawk Down and let those two films burn in hell.
Alright. Well, Black Hawk Down is a good movie. Would I save it over? I don't think I'd save it over Alien, though.
I wouldn't save it over. But I can understand that line of things. Like, you know what? Fuck both those movies that people love for absolutely the worst reasons. How about a legit good movie?
Yeah.
Now, Douglas, of course. We saw it as children.
Oh, well, actually, no, I
didn't.
I never watched that movie until I was in university.
I didn't see that movie for a long time.
So you
like,
did have nightmares.
I did not.
Like,
the best part of Alien.
In the lifetime of this podcast was when I finally saw it.
Wow. Wow. That's
when you watch Aliens and decide, oh, darkness is always the enemy. I'm never going to sleep again.
I was thinking for this week, tied into our conversation about, like, someone in love, I wanted to ask people, like, what is a film in which you love but no one else does? Like,
2012. Roland Emmerich is the best.
Roland Emmerich is the best?
He's the best. The movies are so dumb.
I can see Douglas's brain just thinking of French films right now.
Yeah, Micmacs.
You know, I still haven't watched them.
Don't!
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, sure.
On a side note, talking about number one picks, I watched The Sound of My Voice.
Fine. But you can understand why.
No.
But he likes
he likes someone
because you see I don't understand why Damien agrees with you, because the last time I spoke to him about this movie, the first time he was like, wait, I don't want to say that this is number one because of who is in it.
Yeah.
The second time, he was like, no, Douglas, that movie's awesome.
Yes.
That's
right.
So,
right. The second time, I'm like, alright, fine.
No, it's because I saw Arbitrage after. Because the reason I didn't want to say, yeah, it is number one, was because at that time she was perfect. She had
she had two, exactly.
And it was complete bias. Like, I'm like, alright, until I see her in something that I don't like, I won't know
but
if
then
it's just her.
You should have known, because I completely hated her first movie and loved the second one.
But I already enjoyed the second one. I enjoyed the movie. I just didn't know if it was number one material, if I could just come out and go, this movie is clearly the best, because it would have been I'd have had no leg to if someone argued me, I liked her other movie, I like this movie, and she's in both of them, and that's about all I can come up with. Then I saw Arbitrage, I went, nope, that movie sucks.
And now, as a rule, I hate Lupo completely because it's same as someone.
Exactly. By the way, Andrew, when you say that it's a movie that you love but nobody else loves, what's the circle of nobody else? Is it like your friends? Is it or is it like everybody?
You don't have friends.
because for instance,
there are movies in which you are in the minority.
Yeah.
Right? But there are movies which
you're clearly
the only one, relatively the only one going to bat for it. Like, possibly an example being me with Like Someone in Love.
Yeah, you're damn right.
Cause
die alone with that movie.
Someone will just shove all the copies in my coffee when time comes. no one needs to see this ever again.
I'm sure it's Chris, man. Like, yo, dog, I know somebody that loves him.
Like, what?
Oh my goodness.
He's Jamaican. He does not smoke.
Oh, I don't know. Bounce is back.
Sexy, you know? Let's get it in. Yeah, ma, your dude is back. Made back, proof is back. Tell the whole world the truth is back. You ain't gotta argue about who can rap.
You're a tough little bastard out there. You can fucking bang.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
So I'm gonna impart some of the wisdom of my years on you.
And I could really use some of that.
Everybody loves the soldiers until they come home and stop fighting. You understand what I'm saying?
I don't know, no.
Kid, you got this thing. The stuff, the shit, the fucking grit. You got it, like me. But like me, that's all you fucking got. And like me, you're no good to anyone doing anything else.
Just go through my raps. New York, New York. Yeah, where my troopers at? Where my hustlers? Where my boosters at? I don't care what you do for stacks. I know the world glued your back to the wall. You gotta brawl through that. I've been through that. Been shot at. Shoot back. Gotta keep a peace like a boot ass. I ain't a new jack. Nobody gon' Wesley snipe me. It's less than likely. Move back. Let I breathe. Jedi Knight. The more space I get, the better I write.
Yeah. So moving on.
Yeah.
Into our top five of the week. And Damon decided, tied in with like someone in love,
God
his
damn
top five greatest disappointments of the year 2012.
Yep.
That didn't make me happy when I saw that email.
Damn right, it didn't. Wonder why. So, coming in at number five, it is Taken 2.
Oh, I have that one.
I have that one too.
Like, I remember, the worst part is I remember being relatively alright with that movie when I first watched it.
Yeah.
But I was like,
you're like, yeah, it's more Taken. And then
like,
you were like, no, it's
like
not.
Like, I knew it was lesser Taken, but I wasn't willing to go, holy shit, that movie's horrendous.
The movie's bad.
Oh.
It's so bad.
It's so, like, that moment at the end when he's like, just end it. Just walk away. I like how every Liam Neeson action movie is now Taken.
Yep.
Whatever.
Yep, he has
we're
another
just,
one coming out.
We're
soon,
calling it Taken
way.
In Planes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They retook him.
I think I'm going to go my number five with a film called Thanks for Sharing. I don't know if you guys know about
this movie. Yeah, I know this movie.
Like,
Catherine Keener and.
No. This is Mark Ruffalo and Gwyneth Paltrow in a sex addiction film.
That's not true.
Is it called Thanks for Sharing?
Yes, it's called Thanks for Sharing.
Oh, okay.
It is about people who are in, you know, the Alcoholics Anonymous version of sex.
So it's like part two to that movie that they were in. They were in, well, it shouldn't be part two, but they were in another movie together, like something where she was a flight attendant and he was something else.
I don't know what that movie
sure.
is, but
I'm sure
it
was.
It is completely horrendous. Like, like, the reason that I was looking forward to it is that it's directed by the guy who wrote The Kids Are Alright.
Oh, okay.
And
you
I was
like
looking
Mark
forward to, yeah, and I like Mark Ruffalo. And it also has Tim Robbins in it.
Nice.
And yeah.
He's in a lot of bad movies though.
But I like him.
No,
times.
Yeah, I agree. I love that guy. That guy
but
is
yeah,
awesome.
That movie is bad.
My number five, seeing as it cannot be taken to, is Magic Mike. And
disappointment.
Let me tell you why I'm disappointed. Because it's a funny story. I actually started out not wanting to watch this movie. I said to myself, it's going to be rubbish. It's going to be Soderbergh rubbish and whatever. Then Andrew kept talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
He kept talking, he kept talking, he
it's
kept talking.
Movie,
and after, I know. But after a while, I came
the
to think... I thought to myself, you know what? I've watched this trailer. And this trailer has Channing Tatum et al. Being ridiculous.
About his life.
Taking out from the et al. Is another big selling point. Matthew McConaughey being even more ridiculous. And I said to myself, you know what?
if that was what this movie was, if this movie was men, strippers, being ridiculous, I will enjoy this movie. And I finally decided to watch it. And it was horrendous.
Okay, one question. just curiosity of mine. Did you enjoy the dance scenes?
Yeah, most of them. But you see, the thing about that movie, you've got dance scenes, but you've also got things in between the dance scenes.
No, I'm okay. Right? I'm not asking you to like
okay,
the movie. I'm just curious if you like the dance
scenes. Yeah, no, the dance scenes were funny as shit, at least most of them, especially when McConaughey was involved. But that was not enough
love,
for me.
Like part of me loves to think of that movie as like the stripper version of Flashdance. The male stripper version of Flashdance. And I love that last dance scene that Tatum does. Where he's like, I'm going to express myself.
I said watch Flashdance, but it looks bad.
Yep.
Flashdance is fun.
Sure
it is.
Right.
Maniac.
I don't like that.
Right.
Number four is Flight. Mm-hmm. Remember, we saw that trailer.
I thought you liked that movie.
It's still...
You
remember we saw that trailer and the plane flips upside down. Even I like this should be awesome. The movie's okay. It's at this point I thought the movie was going to be great.
Right.
It's okay.
Next on my list, I'm going to pull up Cosmopolis.
Really?
I
saw that and I scrolled past it because
you
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, you
I
should be
looking forward
to it.
I was looking forward to that movie. I saw a new Cronenberg movie. And there were rats in there.
Mm-hmm.
There were people in rat suits.
And you saw the glittering vampire dude. And you should have gone, nope. And instead you went, I want to see this.
There was Paul Giamatti in there somewhere.
He will be in anything.
You know, like how you were talking about the other day about Man of Steel when you were going on, so happy to see everyone hating that movie. Like,
all the nerds
like,
was like, fuck this movie.
Like, I know Cronenberg movies, and I know that he tends to make very divisive movies. When the internet responded to this movie long before I got to see it, when they were going, this movie is just craziness, I'm like, yes, this is going to be the right kind of... Nope, it wasn't. It was just madness.
It was just crazy.
Yeah. So my number four is a movie where Jeremy Renner plays a drug addict, and it is called The Bourne Legacy.
Yeah,
the Chems! Where are
the
Chems?
It's actually a similar story to Magic Mike, because initially I heard Bourne Legacy, no Matt Damon... And I thought to myself, it's going to
be
shit.
Right.
Then I watched the trailer. And the trailer really sold me. Because it didn't say much. Right? And I think it was one of the first teasers. And you just kind of saw, you know, a couple of nondescript kind of action-y scenes. Well, not even really. I think it was more words and, like, it just felt, you know, tense. And it said something, I think it's I'm running a couple of times. And then it said something along the lines of, you didn't really think
that
Jason
Bourne
was
the
only
one.
And I was sold.
Right.
Because I was like, oh, this is completely... Okay, I'm down.
You guys are
right?
Like building something.
Exactly. But no, it was horrendous.
I watched a man fight a wolf and win. I don't know if you saw that.
Like the gray.
I didn't see a man fight a wolf in the gray. No one saw that. Everyone wanted to see that. No one did.
There were shotgun sticks.
Sure there were.
Movie sucks, dick.
Right. Three. Despite my best efforts to not be hyped for this movie, because Shia LaBeouf was in it, I looked and I went, but everybody else will negate his nonsense.
Yeah.
And then I watched Lawless and God damn it. Shia, son of a bitch.
So my number three goes to a fan favorite director of Douglas, at least.
Uh-huh.
The We and the I, the film by Michel Gondry.
Okay.
You guys haven't
you're
seen
really
this
looking,
yet.
No, I have not. But you were looking forward to that?
I saw Gondry... And I was like, yes.
Really?
Yes.
I thought you were disabused of that notion a long time ago.
No. I'm still... Like, at that point in my mind, the only film negative on Gondry was Green Hornet. And I had enough reasons...
Giant negative.
enough reasons to believe it wasn't entirely his fault.
Yeah, I would hope. I would hope, and I don't know, and I don't want to know the story because I don't want to be disappointed. But I would hope that the reason is, you know, people wanted to make money and told him this is how you do it.
Right.
Yeah,
like I still have like while we talk about Be Kind, Rewind as a lesser movie, I still like that movie.
No, you don't. I see where he was going, and I.
No, you don't.
It just didn't get there.
That's
yeah. And to keep it going, I'm still looking forward to Mood Indigo when we eventually see that this year, at some point.
Yeah, me too. I have that ready to watch.
Yeah, that trailer
is awesome. So was Be Kind Rewind.
No, but the trailer for Green Hornet was terrible.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But we knew going into Green Hornet it was going to be something different. Right, and that's what I was looking at this movie. I was like, oh, so he's going somewhere in between different and what he usually does.
Yeah,
and
it did not work.
No.
So my third movie, my number three, and I have a note beside this film, and this the note says, Pixar fails in Scottish.
Oh, fuck you! I love
yes.
that movie.
Woo! Yes. I am
you
one of
don't like
Tump is a big Pixar fan. I am clearly a part of Tump.
Right.
Anything Pixar, I have to watch it.
Yeah.
I eventually
Did
watched
you watch
Brave.
Cars 2?
No, I haven't watched Cars 2.
Then you are wrong.
You're lying. I watched Cars 2.
Eventually. I have not eventually watched it. Anyway, I watched Brave and I just never liked it at all. It was not
the movie's
good.
It's awesome.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I still think.
No, it's better than that one. It's better than Wreck-It Ralph.
I think Wreck-It Ralph is
no, it is not better.
Ralph.
That I finally watched the other day, and
Wreck-It
I actually kind of like Wreck-It
really
Ralph.
Good.
Yeah, no,
it's
Brave
really
is bullshit. Wreck-It Ralph is Wreck-It Ralph. I wouldn't say it's okay. I think it's a bit above okay.
Yeah, no,
that's
good.
About it. Yeah, yeah.
It's good. I'd watch another Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh yeah,
I love the Qbert moment. I'm like, I played so much Qbert.
Yeah,
as
we
a
did.
Child.
Yeah, we did. I think that was literally the second Nintendo game that we had after Mario Brothers.
Football games.
No Qbert for you. You've never played Qbert?
Why would I? I have real games.
Qbert
oh, awesome.
Is so good.
Guys, an MS emulator.
Guys,
go get Qbert.
I was playing Zelda. Right? Mortal Kombat. Right.
Just like how you're addicted with XCOM, Qbert was that then.
Yeah, but you were children. You didn't know. Played hours of Pokemon. It's terrible. Number two is the movie we just saw.
Oh, I'm proud that it's not the number one. I'm proud that it's not the number one.
I don't know if you remember what came out. My dog, there's a picture at the top of this list. This is not an accident.
Andrew?
Oh, you're not going anywhere. Okay. My number two, I'm going to go with End of Watch.
Okay.
The Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña film. Damon
oh,
is
so
just...
That's a slight.
No, I really didn't like this movie.
Sure you did. No, I remember.
Have you seen this movie?
Which one, sorry?
End of Watch.
No, I have not. Not yet. Not yet.
I can't really like
I think I honestly think I should start a spin-off podcast.
Yeah. Shit Douglas won't watch.
No, not Shit Douglas won't watch. The deciding podcast of who wins? Does Andrew win or does Damien win? Is End of Watch good or bad? Is Warhorse good or bad?
You can be the decider.
The decider.
You can take over the mantle from George Bush. Become the new decider.
Anyway, my number two movie. I have a note beside it, but my note should say something different. My note says Mads period piece. It really should say Mads period piece of shit. And this movie is a royal affair. I did not really like this movie. I was really looking forward to it simply because Mads Mikkelsen is in it. I love him to death. And he is just... He makes awesome things even more awesome. But that movie, just not that great.
Number one. Oh, God. God damn it. Couldn't he just have made a good movie? Couldn't he just... Like
he didn't make one this year.
You know what?
You know what I'm going to do?
I'm going to edit the 30 minutes or so. The first 30 minutes where shit made sense. And then just pretend her. But I can't do that. Because I know that as soon as I see the fake credits, I'm going to go, yeah, but there's like an hour and a half worth of absolute garbage after this. God damn this movie.
Does it make you feel any better? That
you guys now know that
the counselor is worse?
No. No, it does not make me feel any better. Because I wanted to watch that movie.
Speaking of wanting to watch that movie, have you yet watched the latest Formula One movie?
Mr. Rush?
Yes.
No.
It is
He's
awesome.
He's not going.
No. It is awesome.
I understand.
You should go.
I like the director and I like the story that they're telling. I know actually
Damien,
not that
this
story.
Is a movie where I thought I was going to hate it and I love that movie.
That's fine.
All
right? It is still showing at Caribbean Cinema, right?
Yes.
Is there an other cinema that I can go to?
No.
Then
yes.
Just
yes. You don't have to get
Yard
to the cinema.
No, there's Yard Cinema. It is in
actually,
cameras.
No. To be fair, there is still the Cineplex. Palace Cineplex.
No, I said that's cinema.
we can start driving out
like
to
one,
movie.
Right.
We can start driving out to movie to see how they are. Because
right.
I don't think any of us have gone to that one. So yeah, my number one of this list, it's a close fit, but it's going to have to go to Pusher. The Pusher remake.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah?
Because
oh, yeah.
Sadly to admit, I still haven't watched the original Pusher film.
But
I was
still looking. I saw the DVD. They're here.
Yes,
about
they are.
Here
they are. That's one of those movies that we are going to. So
bitches.
Since Andrew's come, we've kind of been on a movie educational / watching experience. That's definitely one that's on the list.
Where I mean,
or three that's on the
list. Say, why haven't you watched this yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone you love.
Like someone you love.
Okay. So. Oh.
Like.
Yeah, Pusher's not good.
Yeah.
The new Pusher.
Yeah. My number one movie.
Everyone that watched it said.
And again, this is because of love of course, as an individual related to this film, is Mirror, Mirror. Directed by none other than
our
the
boy.
Great Tarsem Singh, who...
Hold on. By the great, you mean
did,
one movie, right?
Yes, and that one movie...
Oh,
has,
shit,
wow.
That movie.
Andrew, that one movie has put him into greatness.
But then he did Immortals on this.
I know, but... He also did The Fall.
Yeah. The Fall.
The Fall is probably one of my favorite, most favorite
I'm
movies
to
ever.
I'm starting to believe that Tarsem Singh is going to become the next Shyamalan.
Perhaps.
In that we
but,
all go, oh my god, insane
but,
for this one movie.
No, but
it never works out.
Shyamalan don't have a movie like that for me.
Even though I have to admit, I slightly enjoyed The Immortals when I saw it the first time.
The Immortals is...
No, it's not trash.
It's not trash.
Although it kind of is.
Lower than, it's lower than okay, but it's not trash.
It is not dread.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch it, you'll go, oh, this is dumb. This is real dumb. But, alright. But Mirror, Mirror.
Mirror is horrendous.
Like, I watch Mirror, Mirror. Alright, fine. This movie is okay. But I know I was lying to myself.
Did you like the musical piece at the end?
Of course I did. I love it. Some
Bollywood ending.
My sister actually tried to explain to us that I don't like about musicals. She's right. We have to do that.
Okay.
I think we should just wrap it up there. Unless you guys want to mention anything else that you just
don't watch Bollywood.
So that's the podcast. Thanks for listening. As usual, you can hear it over on Gman Reviews, through iTunes, through Stitcher, and many other applications. Douglas, you're on Twitter. You're DJ. I lost his name. Damien, you're Damien _ White. And as mentioned by Shane McNeil, you are making Twitter better by only using it to annoy me and Douglas. And I am at Gman Reviews.
Grand open and grand closing. Goddamn your manhole, crack the can open again. Who you gonna find open ahead with no pen? Just draw inspiration. Who you gonna see? You can't replace him with cheap imitations from this generation. Can I get an encore? Do you want more? Cook and roll with the Brooklyn Balls. So for one last time, I need y'all to roll.
What the hell are you waiting for?
What you made me do, look what I made for you. Knew if I pay my dues, how will they pay you? When you first come in the game, they try to play you. Then you drop a couple of hits, look how they wave to you. From Marcy to Madison Square, to the only thing that matters in just a matter of years.
Yeah.
As fate would have it, J-status appears to be at an all-time high. Perfect time to say goodbye. When I come back like Jordan, we're in the 4-5. It ain't to play games with you, it's to aim at you. Probably maim you. If I owe you, I'm blowing you to smithereens. Cop sucker, take one for your team. And I need you to remember one thing.
One thing.
I came, I saw, I conquered. From record sales, sold out concerts. So motherfucker, if you want this encore, I need you to scream till your lungs get sore.